Do you have an inherited retirement account and need to figure out when you need to take payments out of it and how big those payments need to be? Well, stick around because I'm about to answer those questions in this, the 10th episode of the Retirement Planning Education Podcast.
Welcome to the Retirement Planning Education Podcast, where you can learn all about IRAs and Roth IRAs, employer retirement plans, taxes, Social Security, Medicare, portfolio withdrawal strategies, annuities, estate planning, and much more. And now here's your host, Andy Panko.
Welcome, everyone. Thanks for listening. We got a live one today. We're going to be talking about required minimum distributions from inherited accounts. Invigorating, right? I'm only half kidding when I say that. So no, seriously, today's episode will be about understanding when you have to take required minimum distributions from retirement accounts you inherit as opposed to your own accounts. And I will point you to some good handouts where you can do the calculation for figuring out how much distribution you need to take. I won't get too much into the math and the examples in this because it doesn't really lend itself well in audio format, but I do have links in the show notes to resources I made available where you can find answers to all the calculations for these things. So last week's episode, episode 9, was all about RMDs or required minimum distributions from your own accounts. So your own IRA, your own 401k, et cetera. Today's slightly different. It's all about RMDs from retirement accounts you inherit. So accounts that were not your own, they were from someone else, that someone else unfortunately passed. You now are the beneficiary of the account. Very different rules when it comes to RMDs and how much you need to take out from inherited accounts versus your own accounts. So last week's episode, very different from what we're about to talk about today. And for better or worse, today's content, real thick, as I mentioned. There's a lot of moving parts. I'm going to do my best to try to break it down a topic with lots of ifs and thens and other conditions. I did do a video about this in my Facebook group, which is the video is now saved up on the YouTube channel. There's a link to that in the show notes. That definitely will help complement this podcast greatly. So check that out. It'll help. It's the same content that I'm talking about today, but with slides and some examples, and it's better and easier to understand the examples in a visual format like that. So check that out. Again, link in the video, link in the show notes to the video. Couple other comments. What I'll be talking about tonight is all based on rules that were put into effect in 2020 under what's called the SECURE Act, S-E-C-U-R-E. So there were some pretty sizable changes to RMD rules around inherited accounts, sizable changes that went into place in 2020 as a result of the SECURE Act. So unless I specifically mention otherwise, what I'll be talking about today is in the post-SECURE Act world, assuming the original owner of the account died in 2020 or later. But again, if there are some pre-SECURE Act things that are relevant, as I'm bringing it up, I will let you know at the time. Also, the factors, the RMD tables I'm going to be referring to are new for 2022. The IRS just recently updated the RMD tables to account for longer life expectancy since the last time they updated these tables, which I don't even know when it was. I probably should. It was a few decades ago, I think, 20 years or so, give or take. I could be wrong. But point is, it was a while since the IRS last updated this. So since life expectancies have increased, the factors are now such that the dollar amount of RMDs you need to take are slightly smaller than they were. And again, this went into effect January 1st, 2022. And also, I'll be mentioning today's focus will really be on traditional IRAs, IRAs in general. Largely, the RMD rules that apply to IRAs apply the same to employer plans like 401ks, 403bs, federal thrift savings plan. There will be some differences. I'm not going to cover them in their entirety because there's kind of too much to go over. But for the most part, it's largely the same. If there are some things that are different through the conversation today, I'll be sure to point those out. So let's kind of preface it by what are RMDs again. So RMD stands, it's acronym for required minimum distribution. Just like with your own accounts, when you have a tax deferred account like a traditional IRA, traditional 401k, the benefit is you don't pay tax on that income, on the monies that go into the account. You defer it. You pay tax eventually some point down the road when you take money out. Well, Uncle Sam doesn't want you to defer those taxes forever. He wants you to eventually start distributing income and more importantly, paying tax on that income. So That's why there's RMDs in your own accounts. Inherited accounts are functionally no different. If you inherit an IRA from someone, you know, that original owner was deferring the taxability of that money for however long. You now inherit it. You take the account over. The IRS, Uncle Sam, doesn't want you to continue to defer those taxes forever. So you have to start taking money out at some point and deplete it by a certain point. And that's what we're talking about today. Fun fact, traditional IRAs, as you know, have RMDs when it's your own IRA. Roth IRAs do not have RMDs when it's your own Roth IRA, like I mentioned last week. But when it comes to inherited accounts, yes, traditional IRAs have RMDs, as do Roth IRAs. When you inherit a Roth IRA, there are RMDs, or you do need to take money out by a certain amount, but by a certain time. Now, typically, there's no tax on any of that, on the Roth IRA, inherited Roth IRA distributions, but nonetheless, there are rules around when you have to take money out. You can't let it sit indefinitely, unfortunately. A few comments about the RMD tables. I swear I'll be getting into it, you know, how to actually calculate the RMDs and how they apply to different people differently, but a few more housekeeping things. The RMD table. So like I mentioned last week, the amounts you have to take out from your own accounts are based on a table. In the case of your own accounts, it's called the Uniform Lifetime Table. Basically, you look up your age and there's a factor that corresponds to that age, and you simply divide your account balances by that factor, and that's your RMD for the year. Well, with inherited accounts, it's slightly different. Functionally, loosely the same. There's a table. You look at your age, you look at factors, and you go from there. But when it comes to inherited accounts, when you do have RMDs, it's going to be two other tables, either something called the Single Life Expectancy Table or the Joint Life and Last Survivor Expectancy Table. I have the Single Life Table. There's a nice, pretty summed up single page printout on my website. There's a link to that in the show notes. You can download that. There's also an example, basic example on it. I did not create the Joint Life and Last Survivor Table because that thing is huge. It's I don't know, multiple pages, if not tens of pages. It's this big matrix. So I didn't bother to recreate it, but I do have a link in the show notes to an IRS link where you can go find it there. So hopefully you find those things helpful. And like I said, the process for figuring the RMD is basically, you know, you find your age, you look up the corresponding factor to that age, and then you divide that by the account balances, and that's your RMD. Now, that's for the Uniform Lifetime Table, when it's your own RMDs. When it's an inherited account, slightly different. Yes, it starts with looking up your age, and then there's a factor, but the difference is each year's RMD isn't that year's age. It isn't a factor for that year's age. When it comes to using the Single Life Table, you look at your age the year after the original owner's death. You start with that factor. And then every year thereafter, you reduce that factor by 1.0. I'll leave it there for now. Again, look at that handout on my website. There's a nice clean example. It'll make more sense there. But it is functionally a little different in how you actually calculate and how you apply these factors, I should say, when it's an inherited account using the Single Life Expectancy Table. But nonetheless, those tables are up on my website, so take a look and they'll help you out some more there. Few other bits of housekeeping before we really get into it. Some terminology to be aware of. The term individual, quote unquote individual, in IRS speak means ultimately a living, breathing person. So a human, in essence. Trusts and estates are not individuals. Yes, they can be beneficiaries, but they are not individuals. Neither are charities, nor companies, nor animals, nor inanimate objects. If you were to name a tree as the beneficiary of your IRA, you can. No one's going to stop you. But that tree is not an individual. So why does it matter? Because there are different RMD rules for individuals versus non-individuals, as we'll get to. Another term to know is a term called Eligible Designated Beneficiary, or EDB. This was a new term that went into effect with the SECURE Act starting in 2020. There are five different classifications of individuals who are able to be classified as a quote-unquote eligible designated beneficiary. These five types of individuals are the surviving spouse of someone who died, the minor child of someone who died. Specifically, a minor child is defined as a child who is younger than the age of majority. Now, I think age of majority depends on states. Usually it's 18, but I believe some states, if I remember correctly, it's actually 21 or something older than 18. But generally speaking, let's just assume 18 for now. So minor child. The third type of eligible designated beneficiary is a disabled individual. And there's a long formal definition of what disabled means. It's not just fell and broke a wrist. It's in effect, physically or mentally can't. You have a condition such that you can't be gainfully employed. Basically, the fourth classification of eligible designated beneficiary is someone who is chronically ill. And there's also a formal definition for what qualifies as chronically ill. And finally, the fifth type of eligible designated beneficiary is any other individual who's not more than 10 years younger than the deceased. Again, not more than 10 years younger than the deceased. So this would typically be like a sibling. You die, you leave your account to your brother or sister who's only, let's say, 6 years younger than you. He or she is not more than 10 years younger than you. Someone who would be more than 10 years younger than you would be like your adult child. So you're 70, 75, 80, whatever. You pass, you leave your IRA to your 40-year-old child. That child is more than 10 years younger than you. And that child obviously is over the age of majority, you know, older than 18. So he's not a minor child. So that, in that case, that child of yours would not be an eligible designated beneficiary. All right. So that's some key terms, and you'll see why these matter as we get through this. So let's now start with the first example of a beneficiary, or first type, if you will, and that'll be the surviving spouse. Pretty straightforward. Now, if the surviving spouse is the sole beneficiary of the account, the surviving spouse has three options for what he or she can do in terms of taking money out of the account. First, pretty straightforward. The surviving spouse can take that inherited account and basically fold it into his or her own and pretend like it's always been his or her own. And practically speaking, from that point forward, it will be treated as his or her own. That's the first option. Second option is the surviving spouse can what's called stretch the distributions and stretch the required minimum distributions from the account. And this is the ability to stretch it is something that is granted to only these eligible designated beneficiaries, again, of which there's only five, one of which is surviving spouse. So what does it mean to stretch? So let's back up a second. You may have heard the term stretch IRA. Prior to the SECURE Act going into effect in 2020, non-spouse beneficiary, or even spouse beneficiaries if they wanted, but for the most part, you know, it was non-spouse beneficiaries who used this. If they inherited an IRA, they would stretch it out. So the example would be, again, you're 80, you die, you leave your IRA to your 50-year-old child. That child would be able to stretch out distributions from that IRA over his or her remaining life expectancy. So, I don't know, 30-something years typically, which is good because the child can then sort of spread out the realization of the income and the taxation of that income over multiple decades. That was the stretch IRA. Well, with the SECURE Act that went into place, the ability to stretch out distributions from an inherited IRA went away for a lot of people, except those five different types of eligible designated beneficiaries, which is why that's an important term to know. So again, if you are an eligible designated beneficiary, you can still potentially stretch out inherited retirement account distributions over your life expectancy, as opposed to being forced to take it in a shorter period, which I'll touch on. And just to recap again, the five eligible designated beneficiaries are surviving spouse, minor child, disabled individual, chronically ill individual, or any other individual who's not more than 10 years younger than the deceased. So again, that would usually mean like siblings or something, typically not children. All right, so going back. So if you're the surviving spouse and you're the sole beneficiary, you have three options. One is to make the account your own. The second is to stretch it as an eligible designated beneficiary. So if you do this stretch thing, you would use the single life table for your RMD factors, and the life expectancy would be based on your life expectancy. Now, you don't need to actually start RMDs until your deceased spouse would have been 72. Here's the first wrinkle, right? You can see this is already starting to get a little complicated. So again, you can stretch it out using your life expectancy and the factors in the single life table, and you do not need to start RMDs until you're 72. You can start them if you want to, but you don't have to until the deceased would have been 72. And if you're more than 10 years younger than your spouse who passed, then you would not use the single life table. You would instead use the joint life and last survivor table I mentioned before that has its own separate set of factors. So that's option two. Option two is, again, stretch out the RMDs over your life expectancy. Option three, if you're the surviving spouse and the sole beneficiary, is what's called the 10-year rule. So what is that? This is something new that went into effect with the SECURE Act. 10-year rule simply says that the account, inherited account, must be emptied by December 31st of the year containing the 10th anniversary of the death of the original owner. So let me restate that. The account must be emptied by December 31st of the year containing the 10th anniversary of the death of the original owner. So for example, let's say the original owner died December 8th, 2021. That means the inherited account must be completely emptied by December 31st, 2031. Now, if you choose to do this 10-year option, there technically aren't any RMDs. You don't have to take any money out along the way. You can take out as much as you want, but the important thing is by the end of that 10th year, or technically the end of the 10th anniversary year, that account needs to be fully distributed and emptied. So you can take it all out on day one. You can take it all out on that last day on December 31st, 2031, or you can take it out as you please along the way. It doesn't matter. It just has to be emptied. So that's the three options for surviving spouse as the sole beneficiary is: one, make the account his or her own; two, stretch out RMDs based on surviving spouse's life expectancy; or three is empty it all out within 10 years under what's called the 10-year rule. Now, I stress that the surviving spouse needs to be the sole beneficiary, because if he or she is not, then the options are different. Slightly complicated. I don't want to dig too deep into it, but for example, if let's say a husband dies, leaves the IRA equally to a spouse and a child who are each 50-50 primary beneficiaries, then the spouse can't make the account his or her own, can't stretch on the spouse's life expectancy. So it can get complicated. Now, there's some workarounds. Basically, instead of leaving one IRA, the custodian can split it up into technically two different IRAs. I don't know if that'll work. That might not work. One of the beneficiaries could disclaim it. The spouse can say, "I don't want it, leave it to just a kid," or the kid can say, "I don't want it, leave it to just a spouse," in which case that would then be okay. Then the spouse would be the sole beneficiary. And I think that should work, where the spouse can then have these three options. Actually, I have to think about that. I don't know if you can disclaim in that order. Definitely a question to ask, planning to be done ahead of time. If you want your spouse to have these three different options, and make sure your spouse is the sole beneficiary. Now, that just means sole primary beneficiary. So you can have your spouse as the single sole primary beneficiary, and then have your kids as the contingent beneficiaries. That would work. That would still qualify as your spouse being the sole beneficiary of that account. All right, moving on. Next, so you're not the surviving spouse, but you are one of the other classes of eligible designated beneficiaries. Again, which, just to recap, that's either surviving spouse, minor child, disabled individual, chronically ill individual, or any other individual who's not more than 10 years younger than the deceased. Those, are again, are eligible designated beneficiaries. So let's assume you're not the spouse, but you are one of the eligible designated beneficiaries. What are your RMD options for the inherited account? Well, there's two options. One is you can stretch it. This gets a little complicated. Again, definitely check out my YouTube video. It makes more sense there. There's slides, and it's, easier to see in a visual sense. But first option is you can stretch it. Now, there's sort of two prongs to this. If the original owner died on or after he or she was required to start taking RMDs, then the beneficiary must use a single life table and base RMDs on the longer life expectancy of either the beneficiary or the original account owner's age. Confusing, right? Yeah, so this whole RMD process is amazingly convoluted, and it got even more complicated with the SECURE Act. But anyway, so again, if the original owner died on or after needing to start RMDs, the beneficiary uses a single life table and can base RMDs on the longer life expectancy of the beneficiary or the original owner. So basically what that means is if the original owner was younger than the beneficiary, then the beneficiary can use RMDs based on the life expectancy of the original owner's age at death. Otherwise, if the beneficiary was younger than the original owner was, then the beneficiary would use RMDs based on the life expectancy of the beneficiary. The other prong to the stretch thing is if the owner died before RMD beginning age, then the beneficiary must use a single life table and on the life expectancy of the beneficiary's age. So there's not this choice where you can use the life expectancy of the original owner. It needs to be the beneficiary's age. Again, that was for if the original owner died before the RMD beginning date of the original owner. So that was option one. Again, eligible designated beneficiaries can either stretch the RMDs from the inherited account or empty the account out under the 10-year rule. That's the second option. So cleaner, easier to understand, but depending how old the beneficiary is, it may be more worthwhile to stretch it. So if the beneficiary is only 30, let's say, they can stretch out payments and the realization of tax on those payments for, you know, better part of 50, 60 years. Whereas if you do the 10-year rule, there's more flexibility within those 10 years because you can take out as much or as little as you want, but you need to completely empty that account within 10 years. So maybe that's not ideal. Maybe that's going to be too big of a tax impact, you know, for you as a beneficiary. So maybe you want to stretch it out. Some other things to keep in mind if for as it relates to eligible designated beneficiaries is if the beneficiary is a minor child, then what would happen is the minor child would be able to stretch the RMDs from that account based on that minor child life expectancy. However, once that minor child hits the age of majority, then the stretch ability stops. And from that point forward, it's a 10-year rule. So let's assume, again, age of majority is 18. Once that minor child hits 18, the life expectancy-based RMDs stop, and the minor child has 10 years, well, I guess no longer minor child, has 10 years to completely empty what's left in that account. So that's important to know. And if eligible designated beneficiary dies prior to emptying the inherited account, so prior to stretching out the RMDs over the person's lifetime, then whoever the beneficiary is of that beneficiary account needs to empty the account within 10 years. There's no more ability to stretch or whatever, including if the that beneficiary is a spouse. I think even then, the account needs to be emptied within 10 years. Period. There's no more stretching at that stage when someone inherits an already inherited account. Okay, moving along. Clear as mud, right? Yeah, seriously. The other type of beneficiaries. So we went over surviving spouses. We went over eligible designated beneficiaries other than surviving spouses. Next are all other individuals. So this would be like, again, a child. So you're 80, you die, you leave your IRA to your 50-year-old child. That 50-year-old child is neither your surviving spouse nor any other class of eligible designated beneficiary. That child needs to empty the account under the 10-year rule, period. There's no other options. They can take as much or as little as they want, but by the end of the 10th anniversary year of your death, that account needs to be completely emptied by the beneficiary. So that's all other individuals. And then not individuals. So if you leave the account to, again, an estate, a trust, an inanimate object, a company, a charity, so not individuals. This is also sort of complicated and two-pronged. Well, if the original owner already reached RMD start date, then RMDs for the not individual beneficiary are based on the life expectancy of the original owner using the single life table for the RMD factors. Or if the original owner had not yet reached RMD start age, you know, RMD beginning date, then the entity, you know, the estate, the trust, the charity needs to empty out the account within 5 years. So just like the 10-year rule, except 5 years. So by the end of the year, that's the fifth anniversary year of the original owner's death, that account needs to be emptied. Still with me? I'm almost not with me. This stuff is crazy, huh? So that's it. That's the different types of beneficiaries they may be. Again, surviving spouse, eligible designated beneficiaries, other individuals, i.e. not people who are not eligible designated beneficiaries, and then finally, beneficiaries who are not individuals at all. So estates, trusts, charities, companies, etc. Got it? Cool. Some other comments about this stuff and inherited RMDs in general. Typically, RMDs, as the beneficiary, start the year after the year of death. Now, if the original owner was of RMD age that year, you know, the year of death, that RMD needs to be taken. If the original owner did not take it prior to passing, then either the estate takes it or the beneficiary actually takes it at that point. But it's taken under the original owner's sort of RMD, you know, the uniform lifetime table structure. So the year of death RMD would be based on the original owner's age and his or her RMD factor. The year after is when your RMDs as the beneficiary would start again the following year, then based on whatever method you choose, whether it's or whatever method you're able to use, whether it's the stretch or 10-year rule or whatever. And again, 10-year rule technically don't have RMDs, just simply you have to empty the account within those 10 years. If you are taking RMDs, so if you are under a stretch and you're doing the single life table annual factor thing, you don't have to simply take one single RMD per year. You can, as long as you take at least that much out of that account, that's all the IRS cares about. You can take money out every month, every week, once a quarter, whatever, so long as the total amount you take out in that year is at least as much as the what the RMD table says you have to take out. Now, RMDs from inherited accounts can't be commingled with RMDs from your own accounts. So let's assume you're 74, right? So you have to take RMDs from your own IRA, 401k, et cetera. What if you inherited an account from your sibling who passes? Well, you can't mix and mingle RMDs from inherited accounts with your own, because inherited accounts aren't technically yours. They're still really in the name of the deceased. You are just the recipient of that account's income, is the way to think about it. So because it's not truly your account, that's why you can't mix and mingle it with RMDs from your own actual accounts. What you can do, though, if you have multiple inherited accounts from the same decedent, the same person who passed, you can then mix and mingle RMDs across just those accounts. Got it. So, your brother passes, leaves you three different IRAs for whatever reason. You can mix the RMDs across those three inherited IRAs from your brother, but you can't cross those over into your own RMDs or vice versa. If you have an inherited IRA from someone, you cannot do Roth conversions from that inherited IRA into your own Roth IRA. Again, because the inherited IRA technically isn't yours. You're just the recipient of its income. Whereas your Roth IRA is yours. So you can't cross money over from someone else's account, i.e. that inherited account, into your own account, such as your own Roth IRA. However, and I don't know the reason why, but you can take an inherited 401k and convert that into your own Roth IRA. Makes no sense, but you can. So again, you cannot convert an inherited IRA into your own Roth IRA, but you can convert an inherited 401k into your own Roth IRA. I don't get it. It is what it is. Cool trick, I guess, if it applies to you, but I don't know the rationale why that's okay, but it's not for IRAs. QCDs, qualified charitable distribution. So if you inherit an IRA, you can donate away some or all of the monies, including the amounts that you're supposed to take as RMDs, in the form of qualified charitable distributions. This is, again, where you touched on this in previous episodes, but where you donate money directly from the account to a qualified charity. You do not actually take a distribution and take possession of the money. The money goes straight from the custodian of the IRA to the charity. So you can do this, and these QCDs can take the place of your RMD, but you need to be at least 70 and a half to do it. You can't do it. The age of the original account owner doesn't matter. It's you in your hands. You need to be 70 and a half to do a QCD from an inherited IRA. I sort of touched on this before, but if there are multiple beneficiaries, you can sort of split them up. And here's why it matters. So another overly technical rules-based thing about this, but if there are multiple beneficiaries as of September 30th of the year after the year of death, the life expectancy used for RMDs will be based on the beneficiary with the shortest life expectancy. Now, this is less of an issue now in the Secure Act world because, again, the ability to stretch out distributions went away for a lot of people, except eligible designated beneficiaries. But the example this would commonly apply to was pre-Secure Act, so pre-2020. Let's say a parent died, left the IRA to three children, and those children were 20, 30, and 35, let's say. Even though it's three different kids who all have different life expectancies because they're different ages, what would happen is the beneficiary, the kid with the shortest life expectancy, would be the life expectancy that all three beneficiaries had to use. So again, in my example, I was assuming one kid was 20, one was 30, one was 35. the IRS would require all three kids to use the life expectancy of a 35-year-old for purposes of determining their RMDs from this inherited IRA. So why does that matter? Maybe it doesn't. Maybe the kid needs the money, is going to take a lot out anyway, but the, you know, all else equal, the older you are and the shorter your life expectancy, the more accelerated the distributions are from this account, which means the more accelerated the taxability of that income will be. So maybe you don't want it. You know, maybe you want to stretch out and delay the income recognition as long as possible. Well, you may not be able to. In that example, if there's multiple beneficiaries, it's the life expectancy of the shortest life expectancy that would matter for everyone. Again, this is less of an issue in the SECURE Act world. It was more of an issue pre-2020, but nonetheless, still could apply. But there's an easy fix. So it's September 30th of the year after death is when the beneficiaries are all kind of memorialized, if you will, in the distribution process. So what you can do is, if there's one IRA that the parent dies, you know, dies and leaves, you can split that up into three different beneficiary IRAs, one for, you know, child A, one for child B, one for child C. So that can help get around the everyone having to use the same life expectancy, because then once you split it up into three different inherited IRAs, then each inherited IRA would be based on the life expectancy of that respective beneficiary. Another tip and trick is that the beneficiaries can disclaim it. So the example I started on before was, what if husband dies and the beneficiaries named on the account are 50-50 between surviving spouse and child? Well, what if the surviving spouse doesn't want it, or the child doesn't want it? You know, one of them can simply step out and what's called disclaim it. Say, nope, I realize I was named as a beneficiary. I don't want it. I don't need it. Pretend as if I'm not. You know, I'll just pass. Leave all my share to the other beneficiary. So you can do that as well. So that there may be some planning opportunities there. Again, if you're trying to kind of get around the stretch IRA thing, one person doesn't need the money or whatever, you can disclaim it. So I'll leave it there. I dropped a lot on you. As I mentioned, this was super technical, super thick. Not surprised if people struggle to stick with me. I'm struggling to stick myself here. But definitely check out the video. Again, there's a link in the show notes that'll bring a lot more clarity to this with examples. And even there was some live Q&A from people watching the video. So I'm sure some of you all have questions that other people had when I was doing this video first time around. So I'm sure I'll get a lot out of that. In addition to these RMD tables in the video, in the link, I also have some other helpful flowcharts on my website that are in the show note link as well. These flowcharts, there's one for spouses when you're a spouse that inherits an account, and there's one for non-spouses. And there's a whole sort of decision tree matrix that'll help you step through the considerations and things to think about when you're inheriting an account. So that's that. I hope you liked it. If you do like this group, this podcast and the things I talk about here, you'll definitely like my Facebook group, Taxes and Retirement, YouTube channel, Retirement Planning Demystified, and my newsletter, Retirement Planning Insights. You can find links to all three in the show notes. If you do like this podcast, please, if you haven't already, I would greatly appreciate if you like it, if you subscribe to it, and if you leave a review, you know, whatever platform you're on, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Google, I don't know. This podcast is on, I think, 15, give or take, different platforms. But if that platform allows you to leave a review, please do. It'll help others find it. It'll help this podcast get found by more folks, as the search results will lean more favorably on podcasts that have good reviews and good following. So definitely appreciate that. That's that. Thanks for listening, and I will see you next time.
The information discussed in this podcast is only general explanations and education. It is not specific tax, legal, or investment advice. Before considering acting on anything you heard here, first consult with your tax, legal, or investment advisor. Thank you.